time is almost up. Thanks for listening to Big Band Broadway and Beyond. God bless, and if anybody asks, tell them Joe sent you.
Must we let it end? And where go the echoes of our laughter ringing the air? Oh, wherever the time goes, I will see you there. I will see you.
This is WHFR Dearborn, and now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. Today is November the 11th, 2011, or as the press has proclaimed it, 11-11-11, as if there's something special in that. Okay. Accidents will happen, folks. All right. My name is Jay Kornick, and I'm joined in the studio by our WHFR News Director, Dennis Reimar. So, mic check time, Dennis.
Wouldn't it be Dennis check time?
Well,
I don't know. I can't hear myself, so.
You can't hear yourself.
Okay.
What about now?
Well, there it is. Yeah, I'm fine. As long as you can hear me and our
wonderful fine.
Listeners can
yeah,
hear me.
Yeah, you're good.
Okay. All right.
Just another thing to look into on our little technical repair list for the studio. We're having new boards put in here after sitting for several years. The board is the main mixing device that all of our sound goes through before it goes out on the air. And the other one was almost 10 years old and failing rapidly. And electronics that are used 24/7, they just don't hold up even professional stuff. So we still have a few bugs to get out.
But well, Jay, I learned, and I know that you're not a stranger to theater, but I learned in a theater class that there's such a, I don't know what you want to call it, a philosophy called constructivism, where they try to, basically they show you all the devices of theater. So they think leave things exposed and they don't use anything to hide it.
Yeah.
Well, we're kind of like that here, whereas the slick stations might hide the behind the scenes things. We do the mic, you know, the level check.
Dennis is sitting at a desk, and under him the panels have come off, and there are literally hundreds of wires, some of them just dangling. So
sure.
I wouldn't suggest you put your footsies inside there.
No.
Dennis, during the show,
constructivism,
you might all of a sudden blurt out something, you know, stimulated by 10,000 volts or something.
How's that for theater of the mind? Right?
Yes.
Well, you know, I use that specific example of constructivism in theater as a segue to our first guest.
Mm-hmm.
We have in
Well, before we get to the first guest, okay, you want to listen to our first guest, and they're coming up just a moment. Talk about a teaser,
right?
But this is our post-election special, so we're going to be analyzing all the details of the election results for at least Dearborn and Dearborn Heights. And I've already said, Happy Veterans Day! If you're a veteran and you survived, that's great. I love it, and I hope you're doing well and found a job. Even
yes,
we've got reports about that. Important new bill was passed that might help veterans coming back from the wars. But our first guest, without further ado,
and I brought up theater because I know Asia. It's Asia Monet, and I know her. She was in the theater department, a theater major, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
And in fact, Jay, you came to the one act festival last spring, and she was in a couple of the different one act plays that were there.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that
always great great, challenging presentations.
Very well said.
Right
there,
now, Sleeping Beauty
that's
is
right.
being performed, children's theater production.
And I saw that this morning. We'll talk about that in a little bit, a little later. But you're here in a different capacity, Asia. We are here to talk about the Michigan Avenue, the 2012 Michigan Avenue Literary Journal, are we not?
Yes, we are.
And first, before we get started, I tipped my hand a little and said you're a theater major. What is a little bit more about your background? You are a student here at the college?
Yes, I've been here for 5 semesters now.
Okay. And in addition to theater, some of the other classes you're taking, I'm sure, based on you being here, include English?
Yes, I have creative writing right now.
All right.
And I have theater. And I have a drawing one class, too.
All right. I took all of those.
Yeah.
Now, you have Ms. Schmidt. Ruth Ann Schmidt is your creative writing teacher?
Yes.
And she is the editor for the Michigan Avenue Journal. And right now, I believe we're getting ready for the third one.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
ma'am. Tell us a little bit about the journal and how it relates to the listeners.
Well, the journal is a creative arts journal. We accept poetry, prose, nonfiction, fiction, and drama. And we also accept art. Artwork and photography.
So if somebody has an illustration, let's say digital or hand-drawn, or if they have photos,
yes,
that's also, and I know that, I don't know if they're doing it this year, but in the past they actually had a separate, I don't know if it was separate, but it was a contest to design the cover of the actual journal itself. Is that something that people can do?
Well, I believe so.
Okay, because I think what they do is they take all of the art submissions, the things that are not written, whether poetry or prose, and they use those to determine what will be on the cover. So, I mean, I just like that. That would be in the back of my mind as I'm submitting my artwork, because I would love to be on the cover of it, obviously. What is the deadline for the information they need?
Well, the deadline is December 31st of this year.
Okay, and what I know that certain things needed to be included. First of all, who is this open to?
Well, it's open to the students. Only the students can win the actual contest. We do have work from our faculty here, but they can't win the actual money for the prizes. But they can get into the journal.
Okay, so you can be published in the journal, but the prize, how much money is available for winners?
We changed it. First, it was only $300. Now it's $375.
So $375, and that's split up however, like first place would get X amount of dollars and second and third.
Right, split up.
So what you're saying is the only people that can win the money would be the people that are actual enrolled students.
The students at Henry Ford.
But the way Ms. Schmidt explained it was that, in fact, the faculty, staff, and alumni will have an opportunity to be in that. Of course, students first.
Right.
But if there is a room available, they'll put those in there as well.
Correct.
What are some of the – I know that there are particular guidelines that people have to follow to be included in this as well.
Well, you can find the guidelines online. It's michiganavenue.hfcc.edu/guidelines. And they'll tell you everything you need. I know one of the things they ask for is a brief bio about yourself. You just tell about yourself. Of course, you have to have the title of the works. You can have up to 3 works that you can submit.
3 separate works?
Yes.
And is there a limit on the word amount or anything like that?
Well, we will be accepting longer pieces, but they have to be exceptional. So.
Okay, so they will take something that might be longer than a poem or whatever, something that's on like a short story.
Yes.
But it has to be really, really good.
Yeah.
Well, that makes sense. I understand that you actually, as an assignment in your class, had to put some poetry together.
Yes, we took a newspaper article I chose out of the horoscopes, and it's called a blackout poem, and you pick certain words and you make a poem out of the article that's already there.
And this is the horoscope section of our school paper, the Mirror News.
Yeah,
all right. Well,
is.
You know that I'm a little bit flattered. That's wonderful. So what you did was you took specific words and as you explained it, you kind of went through and you see how they resonated within you, and then you picked the words to write this poem.
Right.
So can you read that poem as a?
Well, it's untitled, but this is from the horoscopes. Your vanity is watching you lose what you deserve. And that's from the Leo and Virgo section.
Wow. Okay. So we can take other people. I know in music we sample other people's work all the time and we incorporate and make it our own. Well, nice job. So the Michigan Avenue Journal, for more information, is there in addition to the website, is there a phone number or an email? Can they contact Ms. Schmidt?
No, it's just the email address, michiganavenue.hfcc.edu/guidelines.
Okay. So it's right on the website there too.
And folks, just as a final reminder here, this the Michigan Avenue Creative Journal, probably just called Michigan Avenue Journal. And again, the information website about the deadlines, submission guidelines, michiganavenue.hfcc.edu. It's one of those three items separated by a dot in this case. So they made a special HFCC connected website for it, but they put it ahead of HFCC rather than slash after the EDU.
Okay.
Like I'm interested in that stuff.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Anyway, but so michiganavenue.hfcc.edu. But this is actually published, and it's like it looks like a nice magazine, solid one. The other one is, how many pages do you think that is, Dennis?
If I had to guess, I'd say it's probably about 300.
300? Wow. Yeah. And it looks like a big, high-quality
under 200.
paperback book. And so it's very prestigious to have your work in there. And it's not just circulated on campus. Do you know, Asia, do you know how many copies they actually publish or they're thinking of publishing this time?
I'm not sure, actually.
Well, it's grown. I know the first one they had, it was like 1,000. Right. And then it moved up from there. So, no, and you're exactly right. I know this is not just on campus, but out in the community.
Well, that's the other question. I mean, we've lost Borders Bookstore. I wonder, do you happen to know, and again, Asia didn't talk to you in advance, you don't know where it's going to be distributed. Other than on campus, probably from our bookstore.
Right.
Okay. Well, we'll let you know that. They have to choose the stuff first. We've got to get a lot of good submissions. And I saw a date, not meaning to undercut you, but I saw a date somewhere that said December 30th, but 31.
It's 31st, yes.
31st, definitely. Okay. So before you plan your New Year's party, get the submission in the mail. Or can it be emailed electronically?
Yes. Okay. It can be emailed.
Well, that would be quick.
Yeah, and there's some pretty specific guidelines. So please go to
the formats and everything.
Michigan Avenue, the website.
HFCC.edu.
Right. Okay. So yeah, go there. There's quite a bit to get your ducks in a row, but it's definitely worth it with the money involved and the prestige of being published. Asia, thank you so much.
Just as an aside, we don't want to confuse this. We also have a creative writing contest that's called the Francis Barrett Writing Awards. That happens every spring, folks. That's 3 months, and that's only for HFCC enrolled students or alumni. Well, anyway, we're not talking about that. And there's prize money given for the winners of that, too.
Yeah.
But right now, this is really something special. And this guarantees, if you win, the publication in this high-quality book.
I mean, it's really it is. It's like a book.
Yeah. And so I would think just for the honor of having your stuff in that, right. I mean, in my day as an English teacher in the last millennium, 30 years ago, I was in the English department here and teaching creative writing, in fact, among other things. And we did, if anybody remembers this, Diddle Masters.
Sure.
Okay, we ran it off. It's called a mimeo machine, mimeograph machine.
You smell the paper after?
Yeah, it had, that wonderful, I don't know what it was. It was toxic, I'm sure.
explains a lot.
Yeah, it does. and we just circulated among the sort of the English division teachers. They look at what our creative writing people did, and later there was a teacher that published the first creative journal. He was the journalism editor then. Jim Repke was his name.
Repke.
But then we met many, many years before the English department was able to get people like Jim Wanless and Ruth Ann Schmidt when she was hired a few years ago to take on the burden. And it's really a lot of extra time going into doing this right and giving the support and information needed to make a high-quality publication. And so we'll look forward to seeing that first edition. When do you think it will be out, published?
Well, they just came out with the most recent version.
Oh,
so we're looking at probably next fall. But
okay, next fall.
You remember, and you made a really good point. The Barrett contest is different for the Michigan Avenue Journal submission. Right. At the same time, the Barrett winners, and I know they consider up to 20 of the best submissions for the Barrett contest to go into the journal itself.
Oh, okay, so there's a chance of also, if you win in the Barrett, getting into this. But submit to this first and before the end of the year.
Right.
Asia, this has been great having you on the show, and if we can, we'll try to get some sort of message up rotating for the rest of the year on this. Again, good luck to you with the theater major, and hope to see you around campus. All right, so we move on with the journal here, and take a listen to this. It's very important. It's a big event coming up tomorrow night for WHFR.
WHFR.FM, your commercial-free public radio station, is having a fall benefit concert Saturday night, November 12th, 7 to 10 p.m. at Andiamo Dearborn. Enjoy an elegant evening of live jazz at the beautiful Andiamo on Michigan Avenue in Dearborn, featuring flautist Willona Green. Also performing Detroit's own Ronnie Sport Coat Overton. Admission donation is only $5 at the door. All proceeds to benefit your public radio station, WHFR.FM. Food and drinks will be available at an additional charge. That's Saturday night, November the 12th, 7 to 10 p.m. at Andiamo Dearborn. For more information, call 313-845-9676. That's 313-845-9676.
Yeah, that was, I'm sorry the volume was so low. Hope you turned it up really loud. Let me tell you, it is all about our jazz benefit tomorrow night in Dearborn. Patch.com has reminded you that if you have $100 a person, you can go to a benefit for students in the Dearborn Public Schools at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center. That's $100 a person. Now, I just want to tell you, and I don't want to undercut their fundraising efforts, all very noble, but Randy Scott is a local jazz musician who has become very famous nationally, even performed at the White House, performed in Dubai. They just shipped him over there for a concert and flew him back. He teaches in Southfield Public Schools as a music teacher during the day in the building my daughter teaches in, Bernie Middle School. So it's so cool that he is donating his time along with a vocalist, a jazz vocalist, for a very swanky evening tomorrow night, $100 a person. Now, two things. One is our jazz benefit is at Andiamo of Dearborn, which is also a swanky place, mm-hmm. but you can get into here three different jazz acts between 7 and 10 p.m. tomorrow night for just $5 admission. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to order any food or beverages, but I'll just mention the food. They're going to provide their Sunday brunch for an extra fee, the usual Sunday charge, all you can eat for $9.95. But it's going to be very classy, great fun, and you know, all this wiring and the technical problems we're having here, engineers and this equipment doesn't come cheap. The mixer that blew up last week, this is a technical term, a small mixer at the front desk, as we call it, routing to our transmitter directly, died. Half of it died. Well, you can't have one channel for a radio station. And so a new one is $680. So we have that on order. And so we need, that's why we do our blues and our jazz concerts and our pledge drive only once a year. But we hope we can give you some fun, some entertainment tomorrow night too. And not undercutting, again, if you've got $100, maybe you want to go see Randy Scott at the center. $100 a person. I think some sort of appetizers are included for free. But we've now pretty much confirmed the last Saturday in February 2012. Yep.
All right.
I think it's the 25th of February, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
Randy Scott is coming to perform for us at Andiamo.
Oh, we're going to do it again?
Yes. Do it again. We have to do these things
a couple times
a year.
Right.
But yes, we're doing another jazz concert in February, and we've now confirmed Randy Scott, the same person for $100 a person. Believe me, we might charge more than five when he comes in February, but six. But we've got him. So I'm not saying you shouldn't or ask for a refund on a $100 ticket for tomorrow night. I'm sure that'll be great, but that benefits people other than us.
Right.
And he's going to be here. This. You know what's so great about Randy Scott? Besides the fact he's got at least three CDs out, the last one just came out. And it's easy jazz listening stuff. Okay, smooth jazz, as some people call it. But he's local. He still does the job of a middle school teacher every single day of the week, 5 days a week, just like my daughter.
Yeah.
And yet he's pretty well known. I think he could. In fact, people have asked him, well, why don't you just give it up and just do jazz all the time, you know, because you've got enough reputation. You could tour widely over the U.S. and in Europe. He says, nope, I'm just doing Friday through just my weekends for that because, and get this, folks, I'm sure my daughter would say it too, he loves to teach. Okay, they make some money. Of course they should as full-time people, but not much. And yet the reason he's there, and he puts up with all the problems and issues of teaching and through K-12, and he's in, I think, 7th or 8th grade music. They still have music, thank goodness, in Southfield, I guess, because he's still there. And he knows he can make a difference, and teachers can, and he's so dedicated. And yet he gives back to the community, like the free concert tomorrow for helping. It's the students. I'm not sure if it's the Dearborn Public Schools Foundation, but it's students in this area. And he's just been confirmed in the last day for our benefit, for us. And it's going to be at Andiamo, Dearborn, February 25th. So you might try to circle that if you already got your 2012 calendars out.
Does your daughter by chance play an instrument or sing? Because that's an interesting angle.
I know she sings, but doesn't play an instrument, at least not around the house anyway.
Well, maybe she could form it. She could be part of the, with her voice.
You know, she has a 3.5-year-old granddaughter, a daughter, my granddaughter, so it's keeping her busy.
Yeah, I remember those days. Sure.
I mean, just as an example, too, teacher conferences were this week, and she didn't get back home until 9 o'clock at night. And often, even though her school day ends at 2, with all the work prep and evaluations, and she doesn't get back to 5 or 6. And she goes in at 5 in the morning. So
it truly is a thankless job.
Very long days for most of our teachers. And I think, isn't there a National Teacher Appreciation Day? I hope there is.
There should be one every day.
It should be right up there with Veterans Day, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. Okay, moving on. Yes, we'd love to move on here. This is the new WHFR Journal for November 11th, 2011, and it's our post-election special. So, Dennis, I gave you a copy of the election results over there.
Got it.
As posted by the Press and Guide mm-hmm. this week. And the big thing was, of course, the operating millages for the city, I call it supplemental millage additions, the 5-year 3.5 mil operating millage won by 60%. Over 60% of the voters said yes to that. And so the message got out that we're going to lose so many services in Dearborn if it wouldn't pass that, they said yes. 39.5% said no. And 60.5% said yes. An additional 1 mil that was dedicated just to support the library, almost 60% there, 59.81, 60% said yes. So just a few less people said yes to the library millage, but almost exactly the same amount said yes to both. So congratulations to the city. Things will be somewhat easier for them. The third proposal on the Dearborn ballot, should the city eliminate the Civil Service Commission? You know, there was, that lawsuit filed by Morris Goodman on behalf of Marge Powell mm-hmm. to invalidate its position on the ballot somehow either was tossed out of the court. There was supposed to be a ruling just a couple days before, you know, the week before the election.
Right.
And I guess the court decided not to rule, or just said, no, they can go ahead. So because it was counted, and the majority, 51, a little over 51%, said no. So the city, your city council, wanted to eliminate the Civil Service Commission because they said it wasn't needed. And then the issue came up, well, somebody's playing politics here with the Marge Powell expulsion, I'd like to call it, from the Civil Service Commission. Not really expulsion, but she hadn't signed her pledge or whatever to volunteer. It's an unpaid job, for Pete's sake. And somebody, a couple of years later, Ted Tefelsky primarily, brought it up at the council that people who haven't signed that have to be kicked out. And Marge, of course, for years and years and years, almost two decades of public service, ran for mayor once, very well regarded in the community. And it just it came up that maybe Tefelsky and a few others on the council and even the mayor, they didn't like the Civil Service Commission because it wouldn't always let them do or appoint the people that they wanted to get in there. And so for the sake of keeping political-only appointments, that is, the mayor or the council, putting people in there just because they are their friends or their political contributors or something like that, who aren't particularly qualified for the office, the Civil Service Commission in Dearborn can say no.
Right.
They can say no. But they didn't say no much under Mayor Guido. I'm sorry, Michael Guido. You were well known. Rest in peace, except for this. You're well known as pointing a lot of your political cronies to office. And I'm not going to cast aspersions about who was more or less qualified here after the so far after the fact. So I don't think the Civil Service Commission, maybe he had most of his friends on the Civil Service Commission too.
Right.
There was a lot of behind the scenes grumbling about how many of his friends, personal friends, he put into offices that they weren't especially qualified for. And I'm not saying anybody did a terrible job or caused any problems for the city. I'm not saying that at all. But I'm only talking about a rumor. And you got to be careful of rumors, folks, because like this one didn't die after the mayor died.
No, and you wonder where they came from.
So, sure. But the people of Dearborn, I guess, sort of agreed when the question about political cronyism came up. Mm-hmm. They said, no, we shouldn't eliminate it. This is a good stopgap to prevent some unwanted appointments.
Sure. Those were the signs.
I'm sorry, inappropriate appointments.
Inappropriate. Yeah. And those were the signs. Fight cronyism. Mm-hmm. Vote no. Proposal 3.
That's right. And so it was 51% to about 48, a little bit over 48% that said no. So that's not going to happen. We keep our Civil Service Commission. Let's see, do I have any comments about that? No, I just think it's a trend from my, and in Dearborn Heights, okay, let's do that, mention that. They had a millage proposal too, a little different. It was like a Headley override, but it would result after they overrode the state law, the so-called Headley proposal from the 1960s that was passed, then they could add an additional increase to their millages of almost 3%. That passed almost 58%. Okay, 58% said yes to 42% that said no. So 58%, that's almost like our 60 or 61%. So an awful of the same sort of percentages, very close, the same percentage of voters in Dearborn Heights also said yes to that basic millage request. And I don't know if that was a five-year. I don't think so. I think that's sort of like an indefinite mm-hmm. one, although city council can always choose Dearborn Heights, to not ask for the full millage that was approved. In Dearborn, for years, when we were doing, had great profits, we had a higher millage approved, and they didn't choose to collect it. They had permission to.
Until later.
Well, yeah, and then that's why we're not in as bad a situation as other people, because they have automatically been sort of adding to the millage collected. They didn't need voter approval for that because years ago they got approval for the full 15 mils.
Right.
And in fact, this year they added 1.5 mils to bring us up to that 15 limit. That's why they had to go to the voters with this extra amount. Just a reminder here too, folks, and it might have been part of what we described on the show, the rationale is that this is not really, and I know the anti-tax people disagree, this is not, it is a millage increase in the sense that the millages are more in number, but in fact, because it's based on property values, which have been going down, in fact, they're just trying to recover some of the money that we have not been paying over the last 4 years to the city. Okay? And even with these, and there's a quote in the Patch.com article about the election from Tuesday night. Here's Mayor Jack O'Reilly in Dearborn indicating this. He says, well, of course, I couldn't be more thrilled, and I'm glad everybody believed in, the message and the work of the community task force that had to pull this together. Council President Tom Tefelsky was quoted. He said, of course, the city still needs to cut more internal funds. He says, even if the council takes the millage increase to the maximum amount allowed, which is 3.5 additional per year, we're still 8.5 million in the hole. And I don't know if that's over 5 years or just for next year. So in other words, even with the 3.5 mils, all of it collected in addition to the 15, we're still 8.5 million in debt in the city for the budget. So, we tried to get the message out. This is not going to make easy sailing or restitution of all of the programs in Dearborn, like the pool situation, the closed snow library. And you say, well, with the library, they got that 1% mill approved. As we indicated here, 1% is not enough. They needed at least 2 to 3 mills approved. They didn't get that. They got one. So the city budget is still going to have to pony up about 1 mil of the 18.5 that they'll have available to keep the libraries going. But even there, they're not going to probably reopen snow.
No, they've said that.
They don't have money enough for that. So right. The whole city, we're still going to see massive cuts. I think massive, $8.5 million gone to city services. So, of course, it begs the question, and I've stated here on the show, why didn't they ask for what they needed? But they decided not to. They said, well, lean and mean, we're going to still have to cut back, but at least we don't have to eliminate everything, you know. So that was the argument. So as I said, both the mayor and the city council still have some hard work to do because they still have to cut more, $8.5 million. I think, before the end of this year anyway, from next year's budget.
No, you're right. It is for this year. Yeah, saw part of a city council meeting, and that was the exact number. But you have to know that the mayor's doing cartwheels over these proposals.
Well, imagine Mayor Pletko in Dearborn Heights, he said, if this doesn't pass, they're almost 3% millage, we're totally going to cut out police, fire. Who knows? I mean, he said it's going to be a total disaster. And right. It would have been in Dearborn, too, if these hadn't passed. So that message was trusted by the people that voted. And as I said, about 60% in both communities said, yes, we're going to pass this. I think they saw that it wouldn't restore everything, and there still has to be cuts, but at least it wouldn't be this terrible, terrible pit of lack of city services that was projected, that it probably would have happened, as far as I could tell.
Right.
All right, let's shift to the
city clerk
in Dearborn Heights, the city clerk's office. The person currently in that position, Walter Pershowitz. Gesundheit, who was appointed by the Dearborn Heights City Council to fill a vacancy of someone who left earlier this year. He won by 58% to 41%, approximately. Janet Badalow, who was on the City Council, who interestingly was one who voted to appoint him. I mean, she voted in favor of his appointment because he was well qualified. She ran against him.
Or she thought she could beat him later.
Well, it didn't work out. And she has a pretty well-known name. Now, she will go back to the city council. Her term goes through 2014, so they're not going to get rid of Janet Badalow that easily. I mean, she's still going to be there as a city council person. I think the difference is...
full-time job.
Yeah, full-time job versus part-time. The city clerk's is not the best paid job in the world, but it is full-time, and city council is not full-time.
Right.
Pershowitz won. There. Now, but in looking at their city council in Dearborn Heights, there was no city council race in Dearborn. The top three were Kenneth Barron, Lisa Hicks Clayton, who was on the show just 2 weeks ago, and Ned Apigian, who happens to be a WHFR staff member as well as an incumbent out there. So incumbents Barron and Apigian were returned to office with percentages out of there was five people running. To almost 29% for Ken Barron, a little more than 21% for Lisa Hicks Clayton, and Ned Apigian at 18%. Fourth place went to Scott Craig, who we interviewed here last week.
I missed that.
Amazing. And he admitted he had no money to campaign. He had no yard signs. He had no anything. He couldn't afford it. He got 18%. Of the vote split five ways. That is amazing. Somebody with no previous record of campaigning, no name recognition, and no yard signs or any other kind of mailings.
Well, that's Lisa Cliff Hayden. That's her story as well. She knocked on a lot of doors.
She went door to door. Now, she may have done a mailing. I'm not sure. I can't remember if she said she did or not.
I think you're right. I think she did, actually.
We can clearly say here, with no humility, that Lisa Hicks Clayton and Scott Craig got the benefit of the WHFR bump.
They definitely did.
Yes, they did. For somebody who had not run before, Lisa Hicks Clayton, it was her first run, too, so no previous name recognition. She beat one of the incumbents running, Ned Apigian, 21% to 18%. So amazing job there. I suspect it might be the door-to-door thing that would have helped her. She was very personable here, very nice, well-spoken person, and that's the elections. Last, I should mention, Kathleen Abdel-Haq came in last with only 14%, and she had some name recognition. She ran against and was a close race about almost 2 years ago against Ned Apigian for the available council slot at that time. And Ned won by 150 votes, 130 votes. It was fairly close. And she has an ongoing blog spot that's, I think, linked to patch.com. Was it called The Real Truth or Straight Truth or something? And so I thought she might get some publicity from readers of that on a regular basis.
Sure.
But for some reason, Scott Craig, with no campaign other than being on WHFR Journal,
right,
and he admitted he didn't even have much time to go door to door. He beat her almost 18% to 14%. So, hey, elections are very interesting things, aren't they, folks? Back in Dearborn, and more related to, I guess, Henry Ford Community College as well as K-12, because the Dearborn Public Schools Board is also, these are the same people that also are on the HFCC Board of Trustees. When they run for the Dearborn Board of Ed, they also get the other job too. So they have to come at least twice a month, if not four times a month, and deal with issues for both major institutions, the K-12 public schools and also Henry Ford Community College. So they should get double money, but they don't for that. And so we had four people running: Joseph Guido, Roxanne McDonald, Mary Petchlikoff, and Stephen Dabkowski. Joseph Guido, who, to my knowledge, had no campaign, did not even make it to the televised debate, came out first with 31% of the vote, almost 6,000 votes. Roxanne McDonald, who has run before, has some name recognition on the ballot, came out second, and those are the two people that will be on the board. She had almost 31%. Mary Petchlikoff, who was the other incumbent, along with Mr. Guido, had almost 25%, but she was 1,138 votes less than Roxanne McDonald. Mary Petchlikoff actually sent a card around, a mailing, about why you should reelect her. And I have to admit, I can admit this after the fact, I voted for her as one of my two choices because I saw her at one of the Dearborn sustainability meetings.
Okay.
That she was a big advocate of sustainability and how it might affect the Dearborn schools. And so she wanted to be the liaison sort of for ideas that might impact the school. So I gave her credit for that. And, you know, people vote for even lesser reasons than that one way or the other.
Yeah, you don't want to know mine.
Well, it's just true. Everybody at the last minute, they make subjective judgments. And I mean, I think she had a spotless record. She had good name recognition. She'd been on the board. Let's see here. It says, and she was a past city charter commissioner from 2005 to 2007 when we were redoing our charter, president of several neighborhood associations and City Beautiful commissioner, vice president of Dearborn Board of Ed. So she didn't get returned. What was the difference there? Well, again, opinions expressed in this show are not necessarily those of Henry Ford Community College, but I think she had the name recognition. I do not understand anyone voting for Joseph Guido, although I do remember because he didn't come to the debate. He didn't come to the League of Women Voters debate. I don't know. Maybe he was busy or working and might have had a good excuse, but still. He has been the least controversial of all the board members.
Right.
When he was president, though, did a fine job, but he's not showy. He's a businessman type. No disrespect there. Not Occupy Wall Street negativity here against him. Was he with Ford Motor? I don't remember. But so he was always very professional in his attire and his dress, and he always spoke carefully. Seems to be very concerned. He's been on the board for a while. But I have to say, folks, I'm sorry, since he didn't, to my knowledge, he didn't send a card to me anyway, and didn't get to that that debate, didn't do door-to-door, to my knowledge. He might have had signs up, but not in the east side of Dearborn.
Right.
Sometimes they just put him in the west side of Dearborn. Didn't have any yard signs. He has the same last name as our former mayor.
Right.
I'm sorry to say, a lot of people who don't know anything about members on the school boards or the judges or whatever, they vote for name recognition. And you might say, well, that's just totally wrong. But that's all they got going for them, and they vote.
Well, and they vote
that way. I'm sorry to say that although he has not been controversial, he has been a solid member doing the job and president once of the Dearborn Board of Ed, but he's not created any enemies. That's always good, right?
Right.
and so
along
with the same last name but no relation to our mayor, former mayor, Michael Guido, who we mentioned earlier, I think that's how he got the number. And Roxanne McDonald and I couldn't find the card, but I got a card from her. So she had enough money to raise to send out mailing, and her angle, even at the League of Women Voters debate and in person, is art and music. We can't cut our curriculum in the Dearborn schools to take away these things that some people think are extras. They're not extras. You know, they are an important part of life to balance the experience of life. Some people make that argument for sports. I don't, but nonetheless, some people see working as a team together physically to go out and beat up and maul the other team. I'm sorry, no.
That's wow.
My own. But yeah, really, doing violence, even though you got pads on and helmets and so, but doing violence to others. I mean, they even teach pretty aggressive basketball
Absolutely.
These days, you know, like blocking and, you know, and I know they have refs that call fouls. Sometimes they don't catch them all, though. And so all of the major sports have gotten pretty physically intensive, let's say, and also pretty much more hazardous to the health of our young children, too. It's a real concern in high school, especially. If it's college or whatever you think, or professional sports, they know what they're getting into. You know, I mean, they're adults. They can make, but the kids, you know, it just raises questions for me. I do believe that you should have a lot of athletics in the schools, and kids ought to learn the value and the fun of gymnastics and other athletic competition, even as teams. But I don't think they should have to do it to the extent that winning is everything, and that means maybe sacrificing your own health or thinking of the other team as your enemy, and you've got to destroy your enemy. I don't like those metaphors. And so, but you could say, maybe I can't think of any negative things about arts and music too. But I think they're all beneficial.
Slam dancing,
if done in the right way. Well, there you go. Yeah, that's
mosh pits.
Yeah, that's
no. But you're right. And in the wrong context, it's up to the parents and the coaches. But in the wrong context, they teach the competitiveness over the proper gamemanship and sportsmanship. Mm-hmm. So,
our best wishes to Mary Petrikoff. She didn't make the cut, as they say, but 1,138 votes difference. And I think Roxanne McDonald, again, she's been to all the board meetings, as she said on the show. Mm-hmm. She's for arts and music and keeping all the good stuff in our curriculum that she can. And Mary just didn't have that special connection this time around, even though she was an incumbent. And again, Roxanne, well, she didn't get the WHFR bump because she wasn't here, but we didn't do any school board members. But she came to the debate, and she must have done. I didn't see that. That's terrible. But I didn't see the League of Women Voters debate that Mr. Guido was not at. Stephen Dabkowski, just to complete it, got 13% of the vote. Had some very interesting ideas. We've had him on the show before, but did not catch enough attention. Mary Petrikoff, for example, had almost twice the number of votes of Stephen Dabkowski there. But congratulations to the winners. But thank you very much for all the people that ran. That takes a major effort to try to run it all. Scott Craig last week was somewhat apprehensive about being interviewed. Oh, this is going to be tough, huh? I don't think it's going to be that tough. I've done it many times,
yeah.
Scott, but well, I'm not the one answering the questions, you know.
Are you going to, do we have any commentary on the turnout?
Yeah.
Because I was really shocked at the low turnout.
Well, according to the Press and Guide story, and I haven't edited up, but apparently they have, 21% turnout.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, election officials here in Dearborn Heights, I don't have the Dearborn Heights turnout number. For some reason, they didn't put it in the story. We'll see it next week. But in Dearborn, 21%. They were expecting 16%. And okay, here comes my editorial point that I always make. This is pathetic, folks, in a democracy. Okay, what does 21% mean? That means 4 out of 5 registered voters, registered in Dearborn, did not vote. 80% of the people who were registered to vote in Dearborn did not vote in this election. Wow, that 21% really had a lot of power.
Apparently.
21%. And then if you think, well, 21%, that's still half of 50. But wait a minute. What about the people who live in Dearborn who are adults that could have registered and didn't vote? My understanding is that 1/3 of the adults in Dearborn that could register, residents of Dearborn, are not registered. 1/3 are not even registered, which means they can't vote because they're not registered. So that reduces the so-called outcome to represent something like 12% of the adults living in Dearborn, they decided, and not even 12% decided, but half of that, 6% decided the winners.
Exactly.
In all of Dearborn. And I do not understand that democracy. Make this case to everybody you know, folks, for whenever the next election is, and it's in February, it's right. A presidential primary. You don't get into this now or in January, I'll tell you about that. Because that's one of those bogus, made-up elections that don't represent much, and I'll tell you why later. But this, you think of it, this is not democracy. America can't function with only 6% of the people deciding the outcome. I thought it was supposed to be a majority. Or at least a plurality. Well, plurality is not 6%. No matter how you look at it, you can define it and say, well, it's plurality of those that were registered and those that voted out of those that were registered. That's not good enough. That's not good enough, okay? Now, okay, the usual excuse for not voting is, I don't have the time. Okay, it should be made a holiday.
That argument has been made many times.
Sure. Well, Sunday, people got to go to church, so they don't have the time. Make it a day off from work and mandate, here's government regulation. So sorry about this. Mandate they get paid for their job. They get the day off, but they have to go back into work with a receipt that says, I voted. Right. Not just one of those little stickers on your arm, but they have to give them some receipt, and then they will legitimize. Just like if you're off for more than 3 days of work here at Henry Ford Community College, before you can come back and therefore legitimize your sick days that they're going to pay you for not working, but because you were sick, you have to have a doctor's permission slip. Okay. So let's get the city clerk's offices to give us these I voted receipts and give people a day off, a regular weekday from work. Now, in the countries around the world that have like 90 to 100% voter registration and voting, like Australia, they use Sunday.
Right.
They use a Sunday. And so fewer people, but you know, a lot of people do work at their jobs on Sundays too these days.
Sure.
It used to be that everything was pretty much closed in the 1950s on Sunday, and it was only a few of the big discount department stores like Kmart and other places like that that started the Sunday sales thing, and then other people got into it for the sake of profit. And of course, if you want to work around the house and you want to fix something up, you got to get to a hardware store or something
right.
on the weekends to buy supplies. And that's so they were often open on Sundays early on in the 50s too.
And the churches,
and churches. But we've got to do something about making it easier or more expected. There was an article, I didn't bring it in, but a prominent person wrote in the New York Times last week that we should require it. We'll pass a law. You either vote or you go to jail. I know, it's not that far. But there are countries, I think there's 15 major countries in the world that say voting is, you have to do it. You must do it.
Mandatory.
I don't know how they enforce it, but we need that idea out there. Now, you don't want uneducated people.
Right.
They're just going based on a card they get in the mail, or the bully next door tells them to vote a certain way, or else. You need an electorate that is informed and educated, and so that's all part of the package. But why doesn't our government do something about passing rules or regulations that changes the election situation so that more people not only vote, but actually vote intelligently, because then they may not get reelected.
That's right.
The people that did vote elected them, and if they do things that would cause more people to vote, then they might be voted out, even though they did that one good act.
Aren't the elementary schools closed on the election day? No?
No.
Okay.
No.
So I didn't see any kids by the schools.
Well, I may be wrong about that, but I don't think so. They weren't closed. My daughter taught on that day.
Okay.
So, in Southfield. They think they used to do it because it was like all those people from the community coming out of the schools.
Right. I think they still do it for major elections. But
I don't think they let them wander the halls now for security reasons. The public can use the back door of the gym or something. I voted a Catholic church that uses their event hall in East Dearborn for the voting. So I don't know about the public schools, but my understanding is they're not closed during those times.
I just remember reading something years ago that if they closed the schools on election day, then the parents had to stay home because the kids were there.
Oh,
so that would
get
more people to vote.
Yeah.
I thought, well, that's a backward way of doing it.
Yeah, so that's the results. And all of you who didn't vote, I hope you liked the results.
Yeah,
you could have made a difference. difference if you would have voted. And as I said, because so few people voted, the difference of 100 votes one way or the other could have changed the outcome of many of these individual elections. Not the millage, of course.
It was
a landslide in both cities for that. And last, here's a correction, because I do apologize when I get something wrong. But, of course, I didn't know. I criticized the Press and Guide in last week's show. For not making, and the Times Herald in Dearborn, for not making any recommendations as to who's to vote for. And, of course, maybe they heard that, and when they went to press by Saturday, they actually, they planned it all along. Last Sunday, November 6th, Press and Guide, a whole page, besides their usual good coverage. And I think I said last week, both papers, they've had a lot of stories written by their one or two full-time writers trying to talk about what the what the issues are and what the candidates stand for. And so both papers tried to do a pretty good job there, not just quickie interviews answered by sound bites, but they actually tried to write several paragraphs about what they thought the candidates who were running stood for. And I'll show Dennis here live. Of course, you can't see it because it's radio. There it is, the opinion page, a whole page. Well, okay, there's an editorial by Craig Ferrand at the bottom, but two-thirds of the page top-down, endorsements for Tuesday's election. Well, how did they do? But thank you, whether it's Tim Powers or whoever put this together. This is what I expect. This is what a newspaper, because even with fewer reporters full-time, they have a sort of an inside look, constantly covering the political issues of the town and the education issues. And of course, they may be biased one way or the other, but they have a chance to share their knowledge with us. We shouldn't vote the way they tell us, but we should understand this is really pretty important information that very few people could get if they weren't constantly covering these events and these people and that's interviewing right. them in person. Okay, just like we, not as well, but we interview people in person here in depth, and so Dennis and I get more insight than the average person, and hopefully if you've been listening to our shows regularly, you came across there. Well, they were for the millage proposals, and they passed, of course. They said, as I said about the library, by golly, if one mill's not enough, why didn't we put on the ballot two mills then? Right. And be done with it, you know. And
it'd be better. And if you don't use it, because I don't think they needed the full two,
mm-hmm.
right? Wasn't it like 1.25 or 1.5 they needed, and they went for one?
Oh, I understood from the member, we had a library person on the show.
That's
and
right.
They needed at least another mill or two.
And it was a former director of the city. Right. You're right.
So they didn't get enough, but at least it relieves the city budget of one mill of out of the two or three that they need each year to have to come to them. So
that is designated.
It is designated, earmarked. Yeah, but that alone will not keep our libraries open, so they still have to take another mill or two out of the general fund
right.
in order to keep the libraries going, even with the Snow Library closed. They were against Proposal 3 to eliminate the Civil Service Commission. He says, we are in conflict on the vote. Well, that means they didn't say yes or no, but they weren't sure. Well, I think if you're not sure, you say no.
Exactly.
Okay.
That's common sense. Sure.
I would think because you can't vote unsure. You know, you have to vote. That'd be interesting if you had a choice: yes, no, or I'm not sure.
What do you think would win? There'd be a lot of unsure.
That's right. It would be very revealing. or as some people tried to do, they write in none of the above.
Right.
When it's a number of candidates, I mean, it's a write-in, but it's not a real name or person. Just none of the above. Anyway, in Dearborn Heights, they wanted the millage passed. It passed. In Dearborn Heights City Council races, they endorsed the present clerk, Przewitz, and he won. They enthusiastically endorsed Ken Barron.
Well, and he enthusiastically won.
Da-da-da.
Yeah.
And he won. And incumbent Apigian should also be considered.
Well, he was considered anyway.
He was considered. And they put it in bold, so, I mean, considered.
Consider this.
As one you vote for, yeah,
right.
out of the three. But guess this, their last recommendation, we feel Abdel Hulk's interest in discussions will also add vitality to the council. I guess they didn't get the message out in Dearborn Heights from your recommendation because
right.
she came out dead last. I mean, relatively very, very low vote, even Scott Craig getting almost twice the number of votes. So, of course, as I said, just because it's in the paper, and just because they might really know some stuff behind the scenes doesn't mean you should vote that way. But that didn't work out for them. I mean, that didn't connect at all with the people of Dearborn Heights. And I was surprised, too. I was surprised. But I think, again, Lisa Hicks Clayton and Scott Craig, WHFR bump, no question about that. And they showed up at the League of Women Voters, but so out there as well did Ken Barron.
So
Ned was there too. But
your feeling is that Scott Craig probably isn't. I mean, did he seem enthusiastic enough?
Yeah,
even
young
if he
person.
Left, he might still. Yeah, he's only 25.
Yeah, I mean, he made a big decision. He wants to give something back to the community. He's got the energy, and he's got a job in waste management. But he's a small entry level thing. But
right.
But he knows about recycling and ecology, and he just wanted to move them in a direction and represent maybe a group of people, whether it's just young people or people with new ideas
right.
that weren't there before, and somehow. His message struck a chord with me, but I didn't think with no campaigning and no mailing that he would get enough votes. And he didn't win, but again, he came pretty close.
What's interesting now is he does have a degree of name recognition. So mm-hmm. if yeah. this was an effort to do that, he may have a future, sure.
In Dearborn Schools, they said they thought Mary Petrikoff and Joseph Guido are the two, even though they liked Roxanne McDonald. They said in the press and guide. Well, of course, you see how that worked out because they even said something, I think, favorably about Roxanne. People considered her in there. But Mary's name is first there, and they said it's Petrikoff and Guido. And Petrikoff didn't make it. And they go on, and they have a whole paragraph about Mary Petrikoff, a strong city activist connection to the board. Guido is an architect. Uh-huh. And they say he brings a nice perspective to a board that oversees several dozens of buildings. Sort of like Ned Apigian in Dearborn Heights is actually an architect, but also has a degree in city planning. Mm-hmm. He's got a master's degree in city planning. For him to be on the council, that would seem important.
Sure.
Of course, just because you're educated doesn't mean you're smart, I guess. But Ned is. He's got a lot of great ideas, and so I'm sure that's a benefit there. Well, it didn't make the connection for Petrikoff. And again, even Guido, their nice perspective. Nice? I mean, nice is a good thing. It's better than a bad thing. It's
better than mean.
Yeah, right. And he says he provides a realistic grounding for other board members. Yeah, he's not will of the wind, emotional, or doesn't get swayed one way or the other. Mm-hmm. He's thoughtful. Thoughtful, I guess
insightful,
you'd have to say.
Right.
And insightful at times in a realistic way, in a down-to-earth way. So that was all good, but not exciting, but he came out the big winner there. And it said McDonald would also likely be a fine board member, but the board already has people serving, some active moms serving with similar interests.
Well, that's having more than one is not a negative, is it?
No.
I mean, yes, you want diversity, but to a degree. I mean,
if in the old traditional stereotype, the women in the family or primarily have the responsibility of raising the kids, and that may not be the case anymore.
Right.
But if that's the way it is, then the kids are the one that need to get educated, so the so-called stereotypical mom should be the one to be more involved with the schools directly, and the more opinions, the better.
Absolutely.
From that same group.
Well, yeah. I'm just thinking, if it's too diverse, I always worry about stalemates. You have to reach common ground. Sometimes mm-hmm. you have to have similar ideas.
Well, all these opinions. Oh, by the way, maybe Ned won for another reason. Dennis
great,
is looking at it.
That great photo.
He bought a sideways ad on page 12A of last Sunday's Press and Guide. Huge. I've never seen anybody buy a full-page ad and then turn it sideways.
Yeah. It's a great idea.
Maybe
it
works.
Very similar to his lawn signs, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So, well, congratulations.
Cost him a fortune. We're going to actually have in another 2 weeks on the 5th Tuesday of this month, I think it's the 29th mm-hmm. of November, another edition on Tuesday of Dearborn Heights News and Views, hosted by Ned Apigian himself.
The councilman, Ned Apigian.
Okay. Boy, we still have a ton of stories we haven't talked about here.
Can we tell people not to worry about a bobcat on campus?
Definitely, yeah.
We have the Mirror News photographer, Patrick Krupa, took a photo of the wild animal on the HFCC campus. It is, in fact, a coyote, and it's the coyote family. We've seen three of them together before, and so we can put that to rest, and that will be on the front page of the Mirror News that comes out next week.
Yeah, the Times Herald put on their headlines bobcat or coyote mm-hmm. Saturday HFCC, and that was actually 5 days after the first report of what somebody thought was a bobcat.
That's right.
But our HFCC security force, which are constantly patrolling the grounds here,
mm-hmm.
okay, I mean, they're always going around buildings and driving around the campus, they know. And they stated It's coyotes. It's a family of three coyotes that sometimes come out of the U of M deforested area there, and they're on the edges of the college campus, not walking between the buildings. And they stated this because the Dearborn police sent out an emergency warning bobcat at Henry Ford Community College through their emails last week, and that was totally bogus. I mean, they didn't check with the people who are on site, our own HOCC security, and said it was coyotes. Now, could there have been a bobcat that HOC security didn't see? I don't know how. Okay. And the Times Herald, they actually went around students on campus and said, what do you think about the bobcat? And or something like that. And said, oh, I'm so scared. I don't know. I don't want to come to campus anymore. It's bogus, folks. There's no evidence of a bobcat. Now, any wild animal, when cornered, you can't go up and pet it. Okay. It may turn around and bite you. And I think coyotes have pretty good teeth.
Oh, yeah.
So you just don't go near it. Don't bother it. It won't bother you. Okay? That's always the rule here. But nobody's been attacked by either a coyote or a bobcat or anything else around here. So, you know, it's hard to dispel a rumor when it's in the headline, it could have been a bobcat, of the Times Herald. And when the Dearborn police last week had to send this emergency email to all their Nixle.com subscribers about possible bobcat at the college, you know. Oh, geez, fear and trembling.
Mm-hmm.
Not based on any facts from the people that guard this campus, and they would tell us. They would tell us. Now, after the report came out, sure, they went around telling students, you know, be careful.
Right.
Even if it's a coyote. Don't go up to it, for Pete's sake. Don't try to pet the cute little animal, okay? So they had to do that. But some of the students said, oh, since they said be careful, it must be terribly dangerous out here. That's not true. They're just doing their job. If there was a rumor, they want to say, be careful, don't go near the animal. But no, they saw there's a family of three coyotes that do wander out and come to the edge of our campus, but never between the buildings and the main campus.
The photo that Patrick, our photographer, took is actually at the very, very, you know where the Kingfisher's Bluff is over by where the Rouge River meets our parking lot in the back?
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly where it was, like you said, right on the outer edges of the. So everybody will be able to see this in 1 week. We'll have a wonderful photograph on the front page. To my knowledge, the only one taken.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, we are running out of time, aren't we?
Yeah, 2 minutes to go. Just a couple things quickly here. Sleeping Beauty, the play at Children's Theater, I mentioned it earlier, that mm-hmm. is continuing on weekends for the general public. I'm sure you can check hfcc.edu website, go to the theater department and check the dates and times.
I saw it today, this morning. It is so good. You guys, go see it. It's all I'm going to say.
Get the whole family, get your kids over
there.
It's
hilarious.
Take a date, teenagers, whatever.
Yep.
It's going to be great. Friday, Saturday, Sunday times, check the website for that. It goes through, I believe, the 20th. Of this
the
month.
20th, yes.
And it's Dennis saw one of the student plays, I guess, during the day.
It was one of the matinees for the elementary
school
kids.
But generally, most of our listeners would be going to the evening plays, which might 7 o'clock, not 7 8 o'clock start.
7 on Friday and Saturday, 2 p.m. on Sunday.
Thank you for that. Mm-hmm. Okay. Don't forget, I'll mention this, and then I'll say the one last thing. And then, although Joanne has not arrived at the studio.
She just walked in.
Okay, mm-hmm. Fine, good. Okay. It was from the Dennis's own paper here, and I thought this was really cool. It's coming up next week, and it's the 7th annual. I never heard of it before. In honor, well, not in honor, but in recognition, you got that one, somebody got that wrong, of Homeless Awareness Week.
Okay.
They can't say in honor of.
No.
No, you're not honoring homelessness, but in recognition of it, here at HFCC Main Campus, Wednesday, this coming Wednesday, November 16th, 6 p.m., right outside the Liberal Arts Building, sort of a courtyard between the Student Center and the Liberal Arts Building on our main campus. There's going to be a silent walk, poetry read, refreshments, sharing of comments about what is homelessness, and even they're going to be singing songs to make their point clear. And they're collecting for Covenant House, a program for kids in